This is some work I've done in the last 6 months with Chim Yao Si, who is at Rice University. And what I'm going to do in this talk is to give you a very brief overview of the theory of Finkelstein, which Kravchenko mentioned, which has which is the really the first complete theory, the most complete theory we have of the interacting disordered electron gas. And as Kravchenko has emphasized, it gives several features of the metallic state. But this theory has no transition to the insulator. This theory has only a metallic state. Now, the motivation for Chim Yao Si and my work is that we could not see anything in Finkelstein theory which would have any resemblance to what one might expect in a theory of transition to a Wigner glass. And that motivated us to look at the problem from the point of view of how one might put some additional features into Finkelstein's theory. And let me just tell you what our solution to this problem is. Finkelstein's theory is basically an infrared theory which starts from length scales of the order of the mean free path of electrons and then goes longer. And we looked very, very hard to see if there were any loopholes in that part of the theory, and we have found none. So in desperation, we started looking at the unfashionable part of the problem, the high energy physics part of the problem, for length scales smaller than the mean free path, and we find that there is something, there's a little nugget buried there, which is that in an electron, in an interacting electron gas, which is disordered, the screening length becomes larger than the mean free path if density is low enough. And our resolution of the problem is that when that happens, it means sufficiently large R sub S, we have over some length scales unscreened Coulomb interactions, and that once you have unscreened Coulomb interactions, a whole host of new singularities begin to appear in the low energy part of the problem.
In 2D, the screening length is independent of the density.
I think this sort of thing will become clear in a moment, so could you hold on? Let me remind you that in 1978 to 80, this weak localization theory was thought to be thoroughly tested by experiments, even quantitatively. And doubtless, and there were questions asked about the interactions at that point. And roughly at the same time, it was discovered by Altshuler and Aronoff that at least in leading order in interactions, in two dimensions, the interactions also, interactions alone or interactions with weak disorder do lead to an insulating type behavior. And the essence of Altshuler-Aronoff, which forms the backdrop to everything that Finkelstein did, is that the interacting disorder problem in two dimensions is riddled with logarithmic singularities. And the point basically is that if you consider some sort of irreducible part of the density-density fluctuation, then at long wavelengths and low frequencies, it should have a diffusive form with a coefficient here, kappa, which is the compressibility, which I have highlighted in red because it's going to play a role in my story. Now here, the frequency scales as the square of the momentum. In pure systems, pure fermion systems, frequency scales as the momentum, and that is that's one way of looking at this as the source of the singularities in d equal to 1 in the pure system. Now when omega scales as q square, singularities begin to appear in two dimensions. Yes, that was the beginning of this whole business of Altschul and Aronoff. The second point which Finkelstein and Altschul and Aronoff, etc., realized is that if you're dealing with length scales large compared to the mean free path, one need worry only about two interaction parameters, unlike the plethora of Fermi-liquid renormalizations in Landau theory. One need to worry about only two effective interaction parameters, the interaction in the spin singlet channel and interaction in the spin triplet channel, if we are dealing with these large length scales. And the next most important point was that if we consider interaction in the spin singlet channel, which is where Coulomb interactions can appear in the problem, because Coulomb interactions are propagated along this line here, then if you put in this diffuson correction here, then the dimensionless singlet interaction is one at long wavelength and zero frequency. The other channel, which would always be a short-range channel because momentum is integrated along this direction whereas particle hole are propagating in this direction, it's a short-range interaction to which both singlet and triplet contribute. It is a non-universal parameter. Now, Altschul and Aronoff calculated the leading correction to the conductivity in the interactions and discovered that the singlet channel contributes a constant times a log. So this by itself would tend to make you resistive as you went to low temperatures. But there was this triplet interaction parameter coming from this channel, which tended to make you conducting. And everybody was very happy. If this is larger than this, we have the behavior, similar behavior to what was predicted by a theory without interactions and only disorder the weak localization theory. To this order, if you add the weak localization theory, it just changes this coefficient and makes it somewhat bigger. Now, everybody was very happy until Finkelstein realized that the triplet interaction actually grows. And this is, in many ways, the behavior of formation of local moments in the problem. And if you look at that coefficient there, that drives, it turns out, the conductivity to a finite value at low t. So the flaws in Finkelstein's theory, to the two-parameter theory, is if you parameterize this order this way and some dimensionless triplet interaction this way, it's always going to a finite value of the conductance. However, the triplet interaction is diverging. Now, one of the immediate predictions of Finkelstein theory is that if you apply a magnetic field which couples to spin, it suppresses the triplet channel and you would begin to see insulating behavior. Now, in the last month, Finkelstein has made very detailed fits to the experimental data from his theory, and the conclusion seems to be I actually have all those graphs of his, but I don't understand them well enough to present them to you, but it seems quite convincing that except at very low temperatures, this theory describes the behavior on the metallic side in the sense that that metallic side turns towards the insulating side as you apply magnetic field coupling to spin, and Kravchenko emphasized this.
Shouldn't that be enormously concerned because Finkelstein's theory is really a theory at very low temperatures?
No, it is not a theory at low temperatures. I think that was a misstatement. Finkelstein's theory is a theory which breaks down at very low temperatures, and I'll emphasize that in a moment. Well, here it is. As I mentioned, Finkelstein's theory predicts you flows like this, so you should really trust this theory up to low temperatures, and then when the coupling constant is becoming very, very large, you should not trust it. The question is, this business of the breakdown of Finkelstein's theory not being controlled at low T, is this the real problem in relation to the experiment? And my judgment is that it isn't. The first point being that the metal insulator transition is being observed at high temperatures of the order of Fermi energy over 4, and secondly, the magnetic field dependence in that Finkelstein predicts works down to very low temperature, but not the lowest temperature. Okay, there's already indication in the data that Finkelstein's predictions are breaking down at some very low temperature. Okay? So I don't believe this is the problem. So to reiterate, Finkelstein's theory is a two-parameter theory: the disorder and the right kind of interaction parameter, and kind of Fermi liquid theory interaction parameters always occur divided by some kind of quasi-particle renormalization. So this is the right quantity which renormalizes, and this object in the spin symmetric channel is unrenormalized in Finkelstein's theory. And it is unrenormalized. One way of seeing why it is unrenormalized is that the compressibility in the theory is given in terms of F sub S over Z, I should say, and belief as well as calculations in by Finkelstein show that compressibility is unrenormalized. Now, in looking deeply into Finkelstein's theory and not discovering anything wrong in this theory giving you only the metallic state, we were motivated to re-examine this question of the compressibility. And there were various motivations to re-examine this question of the compressibility. None of them are completely convincing, and rather than get into arguments about them at this point, I'm going to defer them to the end. But basically, as I mentioned in the beginning, we wanted to see a theory which would give a transition to a Wigner glass, which would presumably be a continuous transition. And this Wigner glass would have Efrosh-Lasky type physics, and Efrosh-Lasky tacitly assume that the effective interactions in the glass are 1 over R, otherwise you would not get that behavior, which means they have assumed that in the glass the screening length is infinity. Screening length is rigorously proportional to the inverse of the compressibility. And if we wanted to get this sort of behavior, we had to examine from the metallic side the behavior of the compressibility. Now, all of this thing that I'm going to talk about, this Efrosh-Lasky physics that I mentioned, could be all due to metastability. And in fact, when we first started looking at this problem, we expected to see some non-self-averaging behavior of the compressibility in the metallic state, but we discovered something simpler that I'm going to talk about. So in the next two view graphs, I'll present you the central point of the calculation that Chimio and I did. And here I give you the result. We're going to calculate the compressibility by calculating the ground state energy of the interacting disordered electron gas. And we want to present the leading contribution to this in 1 over KFL. Okay, leading contribution to disorder to the compressibility. And it turns out that I can present you the leading contribution 1 over KFL to the compressibility exactly at any R sub S, provided one other condition is satisfied, which I'll specify. And the result is that there is a large contribution to the compressibility, which goes as the cube of R sub S times the bare screening length of the order of the Bohr radius divided by the mean free path, plus systematic corrections, which go as 1 over KFL. You see, R sub S times S naught over L is the same as 1 over KFL. Now, how are we able to calculate this? So how to calculate correction to kappa to leading order in 1 over KFL, even at low density, where analytic methods to calculate anything, even in the pure system, fail. And the point simply is that if I am writing, I shouldn't call it the correlation energy, the total interaction energy of a fermion system, I can always break it up into the contribution of the interaction energy at different momentums and add them up. And of course, in this thing is implied that I'm integrating over the coupling constant. So what I'm missing is the non-interacting kinetic energy. Okay? Now, I can write this contribution as the contribution of the momentums from zero, or the inverse size of the system, to the inverse mean free path, plus the higher order contribution. In this part of the problem, which is the part of the problem which Finkelstein and Altschuler-Arnold and all have considered, in common with them, we have discovered that there is nothing interesting. Okay, the infrared part of the problem yields me nothing interesting in the compressibility. This is where, in the particle hole channel, particles are diffusing. In this part, the particle holes between collisions are moving ballistically. And I can further separate this part into the pure interaction energy, the total pure interaction energy, minus the part from 0 to L inverse. And now the basic point here is that the interaction energy of a pure electron gas at any particular momentum is exactly given by the RPA contribution at that Q, provided the Q that I'm considering is much smaller than K sub F. And this is true at any R sub S. Any R sub S means, of course, KF is inverse R sub S, so that's implied here. Okay? So if this Q sub C is much larger than L inverse, I can get the leading order correction to the ground state energy due to this order from this part, exactly from the impurities with one of our careful correction. And it is from there that we get this term. Now, as I mentioned, the screening length is inversely related to the compressibility. And now we ask for the condition that the screening length is much larger than the bare mean free path. And now we get a condition on the R sub S when this is satisfied. And it depends upon what precisely we assume when we are calculating the compressibility, whether tau is independent of the density, the scattering rate, the bare scattering rate is independent of the density, and Sergei Kravchenko told us that within the experimental results, this is by far the better assumption than assuming that the mean free path is independent of the density. Well, if we assume tau is independent of the density, this condition that the screening length be much larger than the bare mean free path is equivalent to R sub S much larger than omega naught tau naught to the half, where omega naught is the Bohr energy, essentially the Rydberg. And this is equivalent to this condition, omega naught tau naught to the half, R sub S larger than that. At the equality, this implies this is equivalent to KFL being independent of R sub S. If we have L, if we assume L independent of density, we get a slightly different condition. Instead of a half, we have a 2/5 power. So now we look at the infrared part of the problem a la Finkelstein and Altschuler and Arnold. And if we do not satisfy this condition, our screening length is smaller than the mean free path, and we have their results completely hold. However, if the screening length is larger than the mean free path, we discover that the log singularity, which was happening associated, if you remember, with this coefficient, you remember the coefficient 2 minus f. So we are, and that 2 there was universal, and now instead of 2 times log, we are getting a correction which is proportional, which, instead of a log singularity, we get a stronger singularity because of the because in this range now the interaction is 1 over Q Coulomb-like, and we have L over L times R sub S. The Finkelstein correction is, of course, in the other direction. It is going as log L over L from the triplet channel. So provided this condition is satisfied, this always overwhelms this. If this condition is not satisfied, we are back to Finkelstein. Now, we have looked whether this assumption is consistent in the sense the only dependence of the screening length is through the mean free part, in the sense that if you look at the infrared part of the problem, even with the Coulomb interaction, there are no singular corrections, no singular infrared corrections to the compressibility directly from the diffusive part of the problem. The only correction come from the compressibility going as 1 over L, and L is decreasing with the size of the system or as temperature is decreasing. And we have satisfied ourselves, since the mean free path was beginning to go linearly with the size of the system, we can ask ourselves, is our initial assumption that the screening length is larger than the size of the system with which we did the calculation, whether that is satisfied? And to L star, which is the linear extrapolation here, it seems to be satisfied. So our net conclusion is that the high energy physics part of the problem for length scales smaller than the mean free path in a disordered interacting system gives a large contribution to the compressibility of the screening length, pushing the compressibility towards zero. And if that condition is satisfied, we have a behavior towards the insulator state. And anything we have done is only sort of indicative of this transition, that there is a clear division depending upon R sub S larger or smaller than that condition. And that's about all. There are some suggestions and predictions from the theory. Well, first of all, of course, transition is visible already at T of order EF for dirty samples. We have the condition that R sub S is approximately R sub S goes as omega naught tau naught to the half. First, we had this is for tau naught independent of density. First, we have assumed L naught independent of density, in which we have predicted tau to the 2/5 going as R sub S. And there is data from Hanen which looks like that at the critical density. Okay? It wouldn't look very different if I plotted half here. Sorry? Mu is the mobility. Mu is the mobility proportional to tau. However, if you assume tau are not constant, then R sub S at KFL at the critical value should be constant, and the numerical value we get at that for that condition is about half. And Sergei Kravchenko has this number for three different mobilities, taus of about 0.3, and I think it's like 0.4 or 0.5 in those other samples of Kravchenko. So, however, I think there is a big question about precisely where this mobility is measured, etc. So I would say that this issue is not settled. We have also calculated the susceptibility and the specific heat, and interestingly, the susceptibility near this from this same thing which makes your compressibility go to zero also makes this magnetic susceptibility go to zero. The most important related prediction is that the compressibility at the transition should go to zero. And this needs to be tested. However, there is already some data lying around from Eisenstein 94, in which he had a two-layer sample in which he was directly able to measure the compressibility of one of the layers of the electron gas. And the way this is plotted here is 1 over the compressibility that you're interested in divided by 1 over compressibility plus a constant. And this quantity is normalized to 1 here from the results when he had no electrons in the relevant layer. So you had the big gallium arsenide gap. So the compressibility there is by definition 0, so that this quantity is 1. And what Jim observed was that as he decreased density, increased R sub S, this behavior was observed, which was completely consistent with, say, calculations that you can do. It's almost consistent with Hartree-Fock, but better still with Seppelli's calculations of the compressibility. Yes. I'll comment on that if there are questions afterwards. And then at R sub s near 7, this turns around and goes to its zero value. Jim is convinced that this was already happening in the metallic state, but this is so sharp that I would love to see this experiment repeated simultaneously with conductivity measurements. Conductivity were not measured. But Jim did tell me that since he had two layers, this was a sort of dirtier sample. Two layers, when you make them, they are intrinsically dirty. So this is the principal experiment that I would suggest. Let me conclude by saying that our original motivation in looking at glassy behavior on the metallic side is something which we have not yet come to grips with, but I'm convinced that unless something like this is happening, the screening length becoming very large, you're not going to see indications of glassy behavior on the metallic side. Let me also say that because we expect this thing to be a glassy-like transition, much of the fits that are being done experimentally with the dynamical critical exponents are likely to be not the right thing to do. Let me conclude by saying that I think there are other problems where the explicit nature of Coulomb interactions is probably going to be important. The most obvious is the metal-insulated transition in a lattice if it is continuous. You might recall that Mott's original idea of the Mott transition relied explicitly, necessarily, on the Coulomb interaction. The Hubbard model transitions are different from the Mott transition that Mott envisaged. If there are metal-insulated transitions which are continuous, then certainly one can make a very good case that on the insulating side, much stronger case than I've made here on the disordered problem, that in the insulating side the compressibility is zero and there's a gap and screening length is large. And in that case, on the metallic side near the transition, you might have to consider this problem explicitly, as also I believe in the superconductor insulator transition and the quantum Hall effect transition. My conclusion is that there is something interesting going on in the effective interactions in the disordered electron gas problem, which possibly drives the metal insulator transition, which otherwise is not visible in Finkelstein theory, but on the metallic side, Finkelstein is fine. Thank you.
Commenting on the fact that one of the key things the Eisenstein experiments supposedly confirms is the negative compressibility. Below a certain density, the compressibility of all electron gases is negative. Is that coming out in your work?
Yeah, it's negative, but it is small compared to the correction. That is, if I look at the compressibility of the pure system, this negative thing is very well given by some coefficient times R sub s. We know that coefficient quite well from, say, Seppeli's calculation, and the correction that I found is of the form Rs cubed over L, and for large enough R sub s, this completely overwhelms that contribution.
Yes, I would like to understand what the magnetic field would do to the compressibility in your model, especially.
I don't have anything very useful to say about that question at this point, but it's in my mind to look at.
I guess I am confused about the sign. The effect. You're saying that as you let's suppose I increase RS, then your correction to the compressibility is of what sign?
There's a correction to 1 over kappa.
It becomes more compressible.
No.
I'm saying
1 over kappa, let's say kappa naught over kappa, is kappa naught over kappa naught is the density of states, okay? This is pure, plus there's some coefficient times Rs cubed times the Bohr radius over the mean free path.
So, kappa is becoming smaller.
Yeah.
Which means more, smaller means more negative, right?
No. This is a positive contribution. This is a positive contribution. This is a positive contribution. If you plot this, if you plot this, sorry.
Positive contribution to kappa.
No, it's a positive contribution. It's a large positive contribution to 1 over kappa. I've calculated.
I have. You showed us a plot of
1 over. Yes, and then going through positive values. So, one, if experimentally I showed you something like this, okay?
What you showed was an inverse kappa.
Sorry?
It was an inverse
kappa. It was really 1 over kappa by 1 over kappa plus a constant. If you look at this thing and plot 1 over kappa or 1 over kappa plus c, if at small r sub s this dominates and large r this dominates, this is the behavior you will get. If I look at the precise value, I find that the behavior of this going up in the measurements is much too fast compared to what I'm talking about. Okay, but the general shape is the same.
I think A.D. Stern has a kind of curve.
Sorry, I can't hear you.
I got confused by the way you define local stability and the way you calculate it. And the question is about the subtraction of the Coulomb interaction, the direct Coulomb relative. You define the local stability as it still used to be with respect to the Coulomb interaction, but then you calculate it as the second derivative of the total entity. I wasn't sure where exactly this extra contribution comes from.
Okay. I think I know what you're saying. You do not go wrong if you calculate compressibility from 1 over kappa equal to d square e dn square. This is equivalent to calculating the compressibility from the irreducible part of the polarizability. Okay? But this is how I calculate it. And this is thermodynamic and I cannot possibly go wrong.
Wouldn't it give you zero for a pure system?
No.
Just because of the...
No. No. It is the compressibility of the electrons keeping the positive charge fixed.
That's not true, actually. Anyway, but... I think we should postpone this conversation on the compressibility because I think it is we can't settle it right now. And anyway,
you can settle it right now.
Well, I think there might be
this is how compressibility is defined, or 1 over compressibility is defined, and this is a nice way of defining it because then you can take different additive components to the energy in this way.
Okay, I think we should go on to the next talk, and let's thank Shannon.